We did a 20 challenge, right? And so what it was that I challenged people to find 20 black businesses and ask for their Cash App and send them a dollar. Just send them a dollar. Yeah. And I donated, I think I did like $40.
Welcome, everybody. This is Sharon Smith on Iambic Podcast, and I am here with the man. You know, I'm actually speaking to you as a somewhat of a Sacramento staple legend here in Sacramento and stuff, but I'd like y'all to give a shout-out and thanks to Kyrie! Woo! Kyrie Moore.
How you doing?
What's going on, man?
I'm all right.
So, man, I looked you up, and I was like, wow, you have a lot that you've done here. That always surprised me. I mean, beyond just taking care of being a host for Mahogany, you've also a promoter. You also are a spoken word artist. You have like two businesses. You have a photography and aromatherapy.
Yes.
That you do. And you also are, beyond being an entrepreneur, you also are a DJ.
Yes.
Which you fall in my place because I'm a DJ.
I'm a Capricorn, so that just encompasses...
Oh, Sagittarius.
Yeah, so same way.
We're in the same link. But no, I wanted to talk to you because I wanted to get to know... We know each other in passing, and we talk very rarely and stuff, but this is one time where I actually get to know more about you because I know just what's been told to me in passing and also in the groups. But, you know, everyone... always points you out from day one since I got here. It's like, yeah, you can go see Kyrie for some stuff. Like, okay. So that's what I'm here to talk about. What got you into poetry? Or what started you in poetry?
You know, so I in my life story, I find out later why things happen.
Okay.
If that makes sense. So, like, there's things that I do, and then later on I find out, like, the reason why I did it. To give you, so like I play chess. I love playing chess, right? And my uncle passed away. This is years ago though. Okay. This is years ago. So a conversation I had with my father, he told me when he found out that I play chess, he was like, you know, your uncle was a master chess player.
Oh, really?
And I had no idea when I started playing chess. He was like, yeah, remember the funeral? Some guy came up and put a chess piece in his lapel.
Oh, damn.
No idea, right? And so I started writing poetry. My earliest, recollection of being fond of or writing poetry was when I was like 11. My dad used to give my mom these scrolls for their anniversary, and it was like this loving poetry, all dreamy, and I admired it, and I started trying to write it. And so, like, when I was 12, 13, I discovered girls, and I'm like, let me write you a little something. That, and in addition to that, I would just write about my feelings.
Okay.
So the one poem that really stuck out that, I guess, put me out there. In my family, we have this tradition or this belief that when somebody great dies, it rains. Mm. And consistently since I was, I'm 45, so consistently, when we've had somebody pass in our family at some point, we feel like when they make it to heaven, it rains. And so my great aunt passed, and my mom, it had not rained yet. She was old. And so my mom was worried, like, oh, it's not raining. And so I wrote a poem called Rain, and it described rain as being our tears.
Okay.
And so those are my, and so I tell you that because I found out later that my grandmother was a poet. And so she used to recite poetry. So my introduction to poetry was that, from my recollection, that my mother told me that my grandmother was a poet as well. So.
So that's a long way of getting around to saying that you've had more background behind poetry, not just... You just wanted to do poetry on your own.
I feel like it just happened. In my mind, it happened, but I feel like it was predetermined.
Okay.
My brother's also a poet, and
Terry.
Yeah, yeah, we began doing poetry totally separately.
Okay.
He was in Singapore, and I was here, and he came back and said, "I'm a poet." I was like, "Me too." totally unrelated.
And even with that, so you both, since you both are poets in your own rights and stuff, but you also do a lot of promoting and stuff.
Yeah.
He does his Love Jones and some stuff. And then you also do my Mics and Moods.
Yes.
So it's interesting how you both became poets, but also are poet promoters in the community and stuff. So tell me about being a poet promoter. Is it, I mean, I know it's different from a poet host.
Yeah.
What's the difference with a poet promoter?
I'm a fan of great entertainment.
Right.
I'm a connoisseur, so to speak, right? And so I think my first experience in even hosting or doing anything was when I was younger. I was when I first got onto the mic, Sean King and Angelo Williams were the ones that were like, "Oh, you should host." And I'm like, "No, me?" You know? And so I started hosting it, but then also when there was a void in the poetry scene, there was nothing going on, I got an opportunity to have my own show.
Okay.
And from there, like I said, I'm a fan. And so the way I am is if something's not happening, I make it happen. You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
And so when there's no poetry shows, at the time there was no poetry shows, there was nothing really, really going on. And I'm like, well, let's fix it.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And so I kind of just came into it. And in my mind, I'm always trying to stop doing them, but then I get opportunities to do them and I'm like, oh, okay. And I'm always chasing the perfect show.
Oh, okay.
Right. So I can throw a show and it's like a really good show. Right. And I'm like, that's good. That's good. And then I'm looking for the next one.
Oh, okay.
Like what's better than this one here.
So is that how Mahogany basically formed from that spectrum and stuff?
Mahogany formed, so historically, way back in 97,
yeah.
We had the Blue Room.
Yeah.
Down over at Jasmine's Art of Pasta.
Oh, okay. Never heard of
and, that. And yeah, it was an amazing, amazing venue.
Okay.
We had live jazz.
Nice.
We did skits like the Harlem Renaissance. We, you know, it was amazing. And when that ended, again, avoiding the scene.
Right.
And several different poets had different poetry venues. I'm actually hoping at one point to do a documentary.
Oh, okay.
I have a lot of video.
That's what I'm hoping.
So I'm just trying to find somebody to help me put it together.
Okay.
But I have footage from like the poetry scene from way back then.
Okay.
And so like there were several venues that came and went, and again we were at a lull. And the funny story about Mahogany was that, like I said, we were in between venues, and I had a girlfriend that went down to Jamaica House to eat, and she was down there having lunch, and the owner comes out and he's talking to her and he was like, "Hey, you know, I'm trying to do," he was like flirtatious, right? So he's like, "Yeah, you know, I'm gonna have poetry here pretty soon. Yeah, poetry right here at Jamaica House." And she was like, "Really? Who's gonna host it?" He was like, "I don't know, but you know, it's gonna be dope. It's gonna be poetry here,
right
here, every, you know." And she was like, "I have a guy. I just know this guy that you might wanna call him, you know." And she connected me with Felix, the owner.
Oh, okay.
And so I'm in my garden. And this guy calls me, and I was like, "Yeah." So, I decided to do it, and so that's kind of the beginning. The blessing that I had in the beginning of it was that I met Angela Boyce.
Oh, okay.
And Angela Boyce was somebody who was recovering from a massive stroke, and she's here. She's from San Diego, and also the Barstow area. And she moved to Sacramento. She had a massive stroke. She recovered. She went on to become a slam poet and placed fifth in the nation.
Nice.
And she met all the people in the slam community, and she was like, "I'm going to bring you guys to Sacramento." And so when I began Mahogany, she called me. She was like, "Hey, do you mind if I do your booking?" I'm like, "Yeah, I guess. Yeah, whatever, you know." And, I mean, she's booking Talon Macy. She's booking Shane Coyson, Mighty Mike McGee.
Right.
I mean, she's booking poets that, like, you see on Death Poetry Jam.
Right.
Coming to Sacramento.
Yeah.
I'm like, what? You know what I mean? And so that, you know, we've been in Mahogany. This is our 21st year.
Mm-hmm.
And we kept it going. You know, we've had touring poets that come. We've had poets that have come out of Mahogany and have gone on to be on the national stage.
Yeah.
We have comedians that have gone on to become national comedians, like Mikey Winfield, B.T. Kingsley, Kyrie Shabazz. Like, these comedians have come through. We have musicians that have come and gone to the national stage, like Andy Allo, Butterscotch, you know. And so it's for me, you know, I'm a fan. So it's kind of like people say, "Oh, you've been doing it for so long." I said, "No, I'm it's a gift to me. I get to go to poetry every week. And, you know, I get to see the beginnings and then I see the progress." So so Mahogany I had the ambition to create a space where we don't have to always promote, where people just come.
Right.
You know, and in the beginning it was when we had all the national poets, it was kind of competitive. So it was kind of like, you know, the crowd was tough. You get in there and you have to show and prove, and then we changed it to more of a family environment. So now it's an environment where and I have times where I'm going to quit. You know, I have times where I'm like, my last week, you know. But I think God shows me that I need to continue, and this is how. So about 3 months ago, I was in that whole thing, like, this is it, I'm gonna quit. A lady comes in, and she says, "Hey, you know, I just want to get on the mic. You know, I have stage 4 terminal cancer. My husband left me, and my son is on meth, and I just need to get on the mic." And right in that moment, I'm like, this is why we are here. It's not for packed houses. It's not for, we don't make any money. Mm-hmm. We barely make enough to pay the door guy. But the reason why we're there is for people to come. It's an open door. I call it church sometimes.
Right.
With no disrespect to the actual church. But the reason why I say that is because it's always there. It's every Wednesday. And it's opened for anybody to come and express themselves. And that lady came and she was like, I just want to get on the mic and let it out. And you know, just as recently as last week, we lost Kobe Bryant.
Yeah.
And we were talking on the stage. I was talking on stage about how this space that we're in now, we have men who are exposing their emotions, right? They're men are crying. Like, I cried. I've cried every day, right? And this is somebody, Kobe, I didn't even know Kobe. I don't know Kobe.
Right.
I used to hate Kobe. Right?
Like, that's understandable.
Like, I celebrated when he had that hamburger and he got sick. I'm like, yes! You know, but we feel connected to Kobe because we watched him grow and we watched him become a father, right? And a dedicated person. So it hurts everybody. And this is the time that men are expressing and we're showing our emotions, which is not always understood. And as I said that, a good friend of mine came into Mahogany and he was drunk as a skunk. And he came in and he was like heckling and I understand the space that we're in, right? And so this is home. You know, I'm glad he came there because he was safe. He wasn't jumping in the streets or he wasn't driving. You know? So I talked to him outside. You know, I pulled him outside. I said, "Hey, let me talk to you, man." First thing he says, "I'm Kobe Bryant. I am Kobe." And we hugged, right? And that's why we're there. And I've had there's another poet I can think of that has a mental health problem. She came one night when she was having a mental health challenge, and again she came home, where it's a safe sanctuary, where any type of expression is welcome. You can heal there. My dad died. I went to poetry, right? Every tragedy I go to poetry because that's where we heal, right. And that is the purpose of why we have it.
Yeah. Being being Northern California's longest open mic, poetry open mic, mm-hmm. Here, even in Sacramento, that's actually a pretty good endeavor. I mean, you've paved the way for a lot of. I've heard the name. Even I even went there when I was living in Stockton in 2005. I came here with Anywhere Cafe with Brandy and also mm-hmm. and I was. He calls himself artist, yeah. Artistic. Yeah, so, yeah. But yeah. He's Black Arts. He's Kiss My Black Arts down in Oakland.
Yeah,
he's my boy and stuff. We've been rocking instead. But yeah, we used to come up and we went to when it was the Jamaica House and mm-hmm. we rocked it over there. And it was like oh, okay. But then when y'all changed to Queen Sheba,
yeah.
I was like, oh, when I moved up here, it was Queen Sheba, and I was like, oh, this is new. But mm-hmm. the place is still y'all still there.
Yeah.
So that's one good. That's
every
one
time good. It's been sold, it's been in the contract that poetry
nice.
Exists. So when Jamaica House left, it was Sweet Fingers. Sweet Fingers had it in their contract that they had poetry. When Sweet Fingers left, Queen Sheba called me, was like, "Yo, everybody's telling me that we gotta have the poetry." I'm at home. I get this call. Hello, this is the Ethiopian. You know,
yeah.
Poetry night, come. You know, I was like, what? This is Zion. You need to come for poetry night. So, it's like I said, it's a blessing for me. We don't win awards.
Right.
We've never won an award.
Really?
Never. We've never won an award. We've the closest we've been, we've been third in News and Review. But we've never won an award for Mahogany. Never. I've never won an award. But it's not about the awards.
Right.
Right? And it's like I said, the awards is when I see poets come into there and express, or I see poets grow, and I see people come in and they say, you know, I went to college, I got my degree, I come back, oh, you're still here.
Right.
You know, and that's, for me, it's that, it's the legacy, it's me being able to help in any way I can. I mean, I would love to have an award. I'm not saying I don't want one.
Recognition would be good. Yeah.
Recognition is cool.
Yeah.
But we've never won an award for poetry. So, but
only thing I have issue with is y'all go past one. Sometimes
we go to midnight.
I mean, I have to get up for work, and that's the only downfall I have. Like, if they didn't go, one day I had to stay there. I was like, I was there from 9 to 1, and I was like, oh God, I gotta get up in the morning.
Yeah, that was back in the Jamaica House days. We used to go to one. I tell my hosts that I'm gonna start unplugging things at 11:45, okay. And by 12 we usually wrap it up. I've heard that over the years, yeah. Right? And I'm usually there. Now I live in Elk Grove, I get there later, but I used to be there at 8:30.
Yeah.
And the challenge we have is that because it's a restaurant, we have to let the patrons have their time.
Yeah.
So we can't just start doing poetry right in the middle of their dinner.
Right.
And so we have to kind of wait for the patrons. So 9 o'clock, this is how we go. 9 o'clock, we start music. So it's kind of a way to groove and vibe, get your honey wine, you know, get seated, sign the list, get acquainted, and then right at 10 o'clock we start.
Okay.
And we've tried to pull it back to start at 9:30. The crowd comes at, I could film it.
Yeah.
I could film it. We're set up. We're there. We're ready to go.
Waiting.
And at 10.
They all walk in.
20 people walk in. At 10. I'm like, if they came earlier, we start earlier. You know, but they, right at 10 o'clock, they walk in. I don't know how they do it, but right at 10 o'clock, they come in. And for me, I tell people, and this is, I guess, a blessing or a gift or I don't know what it is, but I work in Antioch.
Yeah.
So every morning, I have to be in Antioch at 7:30 a.m.
Oh, you're going far.
So, yeah. And so if I can make it, right, I can do poetry, and I make it on time to Antioch, if people who work downtown.
That's true.
You know what I'm saying? I'm not knocking them. I'm just telling
still,
you
yeah,
it's possible to go to poetry truth. And then also make it to work. And like I said, we try to end it by midnight so that it's not too much. But the crowd has kind of dictated a little bit of what time we start.
Basically.
they walk in at 10. You know, and we even had people show up at 11:45. Like, can I get on? I'm like, no.
we got to go.
I'm older now. I can't stay. I'm not that type of guy to stay up that late. So, you know, we hope we're open to trying to start earlier. If people come earlier and they help it, we'll start earlier. But we do have the Saturdays, every last Saturday at the Guild we started up.
Yeah, I was going to ask about mics. So tell us about mics and moods.
It's an evolving thing.
Okay.
It's evolving. I originally, when I got the opportunity, when the Guild called me, it was like, we want to do poetry. I said, yeah. And I was going to do, like, bring poets from out of town. I want to be like this highest level of poetry that we could find. And we're not there. Sacramento is not there.
What do you mean?
Poetry, usually it's at its peak when it's a trend.
Okay.
So the movie Love Jones came out.
Yeah.
Poetry was hot. The movie Slam came out. Poetry was hot. Deaf Poetry Jam came out. Poetry was hot. Now we're kind of just back to the baseline.
Right.
And so, you know, I brought Prentice Powell, who I was excited about. Prentice Powell, he's coming to town. And we did a decent crowd. It wasn't 10 years ago, it would have been filled up, right? 5 years ago, it would have been packed. So it's kind of like people were like, oh, poetry's cool. You know, it's cool. And then I would say also, the thinking has changed. And I just talked to somebody last week about this. When I first started doing poetry, my fourth time reading, I was a feature at the Blue Room.
Nice.
That meant a lot to me. It meant the world. I practiced. I took it serious, and I stepped my level up to be. And so that's what Mics and Moods is now.
Right.
Is that we're not. We don't want to be the elitists, right? We want to put a good show on. So it's good poetry, good music, good comedy. But it may be somebody who just needs that break to get on stage and be part of something to help them elevate, right?
Okay.
Because there's open mic, right? And then there's the feature. And so what we do is when I book a poet, we have to talk on the phone, we have the conversation, or maybe even meet for coffee, and I tell them, like, open mic is one thing, the feature is the level up, right? So it's a regular in-season game versus the playoffs.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, fair.
And so we are cultivating poetry at Mics and Moods. That's what, you know, it's a mic and then there's a mood. The mood is because we go from poetry to music to comedy.
Right.
And so you may hear some sad poems, then you may hear some up-tempo music, and then comedy, or you know, whatever. It can go either way. But for the most part, we're giving people a variety of different things.
Oh, okay.
I'm meeting with some people, so we're going to be doing it a little different this year. We're going to have, it's going to be a series of shows. What I mean by that is that we have Russell Cummings. He's going to host a show.
Right.
His show is going to be every 3 months starting in March. So March, was it June, and then September, and then December. Those are going to be his show. So he's going to have one vibe for that show. I'm doing a show called Brown Sugar, which is an art show, and then erotic poetry and music and all that.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, that's going to be 4 times a year. And then I'm meeting with, and right after I leave here, David DeLamora.
Yeah.
And he's going to do his show, which is this intense, like, wrestling type.
Oh, he's doing Spoken Word on Federation? Or is it
he's going to do the Spoken Word Federation.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Every 3 months. So it's going to be like gumbo, right?
Okay.
You'll go every month. It'll be a reason to go every single month because it's going to be a different show.
Nice.
You know what I mean? So, but like I said, we're cultivating. You know, we're gonna bring poetry, I won't say back, because I mean, it's still there.
Right.
You know, there's like I said, there's Mahogany, there's the Poetry Center, there's Luna's, and Sacramento Area Youth Speaks, they're hot.
Right.
And so we just want to just be in the gumbo, in the mix, so to speak, and bring our take on it. So.
But you are in the gumbo.
We are.
I mean, as much as people, you know, as you said, don't recognize us on as being one of the points on the sheets of the 2000 best Sacramento Blazer place. You are in the go. I mean, everybody. I mean, Rudy from Francisco. I mean, everyone has said, "Hey, I know Mahogany down the way. I just came up here to see y'all." You know, they know. I mean.
And I appreciate that. You know, I got a call 2 weeks ago from Ice Life.
Yeah.
I was like, what? You know, he was like, I'm coming to Sacramento. How you doing? It's good to be remembered and mentioned.
Yeah, stop.
Yeah. Yeah. We had a years ago, was in Florida, and he was at an open mic in Florida, and he signs a list. He says, I'm from Sacramento. And my friend, Will the Real One, was the owner of the Poetry Cafe.
Okay.
And he was like, Sacramento? Kyrie. Boom. So I love that. Love that. Like, oh, okay, you know. I feel like a mini, like, you know, I think I'm probably like a J-list celebrity.
Yeah, but you are a public figure here in Sacramento.
Yeah. Then
people know you. I mean, black people know you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Beyond black people, they know you. It's like, oh, you want to know Kyrie?
Yeah, yeah. I appreciate it. You know, like I said, it's an honor. That's my award.
Yeah.
You know, when I go places, people know me or they know the venue, they know Mahogany.
Because like Bob Stanley.
We're exactly. You know, and so I'm like that's kind of how I love it like that because they're talking good.
Right, right.
You know, what I mean? It's not like I heard about you. No, they hear about the poetry. Yeah. And everything is rooted in that and connected to that. Like I DJ because I started at Mahogany.
Okay.
I started DJing at Mahogany and I was like people were asking me like, "Do you do weddings?" And I'm like, yeah, I guess.
So is that part of your speaking of that, you DJ, you also are a promoter, you also do aromatherapy, you also do photography.
Yeah.
You're basically a black entrepreneur.
Yeah.
Basically in here.
My mom raised us that there's nothing that we cannot do.
Right.
There's nothing that we cannot do. And a lot of stuff I got into just kind of like I said, I was doing it. and but there's nothing I cannot do. And so I love music, so I'm always listening to music. I love all genres of music. I played in the band from fifth grade all the way up to 12th grade. And so, like I said, I got the equipment. Well, I was a DJ at 15.
Okay.
And somebody stole my equipment. And so I was like, but I just always have kind of been a fan of it. And at Mahogany, we needed a DJ. And so I started DJing. And now people hire me to weddings and events and stuff like that. So I'm actually like having fun.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's like, this is what I love doing. The photography, I just like taking pictures. I was, when I turned 18, I was walking around Thursday Night Market? K Street.
Used
to open up, and it was called Thursday Night Market.
Right.
And we would just be out there socializing, and I'd just bring a camera and take photos. And my friend Lanier Benoit actually was like, you should be a photographer. And he taught me how to use a camera.
Okay.
And so since then, I've been doing photography. And it's liberating. It's, you know, you get to, my photography company is called The Magic Eye.
Yes.
And the reason why I call it, this is funny, I originally called it The Magic Eye because Denzel in Train Day was like, you got the magic eye. The reason the car, yeah. You got the magic eye. And that kind of stuck. But now I look at it as the camera is a magical eye because it captures things that you don't see with your normal eye, right? I can stop time, I can fast, you know, I can do all these things. So that's the photography aspect of it. Aromatherapy, a friend of mine was telling me when I first moved out, he sold me some incense. He never had the same incense, like back to back. He would have strawberry one day, then he would have like vanilla, like whatever. And so I learned how to make incense. I learned the properties of what different scents and smells do to help calm down. I work with kids, right. So I do behaviors. A lot of that aromatherapy helps tremendously with their behaviors because they walk into my office and it's lavender. Right. You know what I mean? Right. Yeah, you can be mad at lavender. You know, a gang fight and it's lavender going. Yeah. You can't be mad at lavender. Come on. So I, you know, it's lavender and then we got the amethyst. Right. You know what I mean? They don't even know. They walked into a spell. It's really? Like, how you gonna be mad? Calm it down. How you gonna be mad at vanilla? Come on.
So how you gonna be mad with sage going in the way?
Sage. You know what I'm saying? We're cleaning up. Sit down. You know what I mean? That's kind of like the. So everything kind of intertwines. You know, right. I garden just because there's dirt outside, and I put seeds in it, and I like to eat, and I'm cheap, so it's free food. So
it's
you know, it helps calm. If you don't have a hobby, if you don't have anything that you're doing, it's kind of boring,
right?
You know what I mean? And so my mind works to where like there's nothing I can't do. You know, if I learn it, I can do it. Cleo is the same way. Cleo right. is a singer. She's a poet. She's a rapper. She's an artist. She's a producer. She's a chef.
She has her own catering business.
She's got her own catering business. I mean, I've seen this girl. We've had a conversation at one point, like, yeah, we should do this. And the next morning, she's got a website for it.
Yeah.
It's like, wait. She's like, oh, no, we're ready to go. Let's just do it. You know what I mean? And that's kind of how I am. Like, I feel like there's nothing I can't do. You know, I wanted to have a festival. And somebody was like, well, why not? And I'm like, okay. And I create the Mahogany Festival. You know what I mean? And
okay. That, yeah.
So every June we have the Mahogany Festival, which is a celebration of mahogany. But also I see the lull or the, not lull, but I can see the need in our community to have conversations.
Right.
Certain conversations like buying a home.
Right.
If you're out there paying rent and you're talking about rent control and you're paying $1,500 a month in rent, you can pay that same $1,500 in mortgage,
right?
And you can own the home,
yeah.
And you don't have to worry about it going up,
yeah.
Right? And it's not that hard to get a home, you know.
That's true.
And so I bring in realtors to talk about that, and I bring in select realtors that are not specifically trying to make a buck,
right.
But really, really focus on home ownership, like encouraging people to buy homes. Even if it's with somebody else, they just give the people the education on the programs. There's programs that give you money. So like NACA, I work in Antioch. So in Antioch, I told my coworkers, there's a program that would give you $50,000 to buy a home. And you don't have to pay it back. Only way you pay it back is if you sell your home before 45 years.
Oh, snap.
That's it. And they just give you the money. So we talk about that. We talk about health. we're not engaged in good conversations about health. So we have people who are in their 30s, early 40s, having strokes, heart attacks. We have those diabetes.
Right.
So we have those conversations about healthy eating, and at the same time, good eating. Right. So you don't have to sacrifice. I love French fries. I can't live without them. Right. But I eat less. Right. I still eat them. I don't eat. I don't get a large.
Right.
Right. I get a small.
Yeah.
And that satisfies my craving for the French fries.
Price, yeah.
So you can portion control, and just have different practices like eating salad before you eat your meal.
Yeah.
That kind of fills you up a little bit. So we talk about those things at the Mahogany Festival. We talk about mental health. We talk about men being able to express themselves.
Right.
We talk about women being able to feel protected. We talk about education. If you go on to Zillow Zillow is the one I found, and type your address in. And type your address in and go down to schools and click on the thing. And it has, I think it's a website called Great Schools.
Right.
It's ratings for schools. You go on there, you look at the test results, right? Their data for race,
right?
And you may have a great school, maybe a 7 out of 10, maybe a great school. And you look at the breakdown for the different races. So you have white people, Asian, Latino, African Americans, and their schools. I live in Elk Grove, so I did the data. And their schools that may be a 10 for the Caucasians and 10 for the Asian,
right.
1 for black people. One.
Yeah.
And it says on the thing, this school is not, if it's anything below like a 5 or whatever, this school is not serving the kids.
Oh.
Right?
Okay.
And these are conversations that this is something we need to know.
Right.
We trust that we're sending our kid to school and they're not getting the proper services at the school. And I sad to say that our parents don't show up. I work at a school.
Yeah.
You know, and luckily we have some pretty involved parents, but it's not always that way. And so when you're not involved in your kid's education, your kid is getting the scraps pretty much. The teacher's not paying attention to that kid because they know their parent's not calling to say, why didn't he get homework? You know what I mean?
Right.
They know that, Johnny didn't take his homework. He ripped it up. Okay, no worries.
Oh, okay.
Right? But the mom and dad need to call and be like, hey, he didn't get homework today. What's up?
That's true.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's true.
Like, parent teacher night, what's up? I'm here.
You know. Speaking of that, congratulations on your upcoming baby,
thank
sir.
You. Yeah,
mean,
yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Scared to death.
Is this your first?
The first child, first child.
It gets there. You hold them tight. It's like, okay, you're good. All right, you good?
I
got the baby seat right. It's
Yeah. The wife is, she's on federal regulations and everything. I think I did it wrong. So, I had the idea to live my life, right? I'm going to live my life. I'm young. I'm going to do everything when I'm young. I'm going to live my life. And then I get older, I'm going to have kids, right?
Right.
And now I'm older, right?
Yeah.
And all my friends are saying goodbye to their kids. Like, my child just turned 18. He got to go. You know, I'm a grandfather or whatever else. And that now they're going onto the boat and, you know, getting in the RV and doing their whatever. And I'm having a kid.
Yeah.
I'm beginning. And I'm tired already. I'm like, I don't know. This dude want to play catch or, I mean, you know.
I understand.
I like it quiet. Play a little Miles Davis, you know. Now I got to get, you know, big baby or a little Yachty or whoever the people are, you know, rapping. Okay,
you got to see about them. Like, okay, these rappers can be different from the rappers I used to.
Yeah, you know. So now I gotta, you know, we gotta childproof the house.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? So, but I think, you know, I've worked with kids for like a long time, so I have high hopes that we'll be okay.
Okay.
He got a lot of aunties and uncles that we're going to be visiting.
Most definitely. Most definitely. They all
dropping them off at grandma's house.
I'm looking for you like that, man. I'm looking forward for you to get that. No doubt.
So
speaking of which, so you've had a lot of the things you've done in the poetry community. Do you have books or anything that you've written or anything like that?
I have chapbooks.
Oh, you do have chapbooks.
So
okay,
back
cool.
in the day, you know, the old going out of Kinko's or whatever.
Right.
One of my goals, and I hope to achieve it, is to do an actual book.
Okay.
Right? And maybe even an anthology of some of the poets that have come to Mahogany.
Okay.
And put together an anthology. I just don't know how to do it. So
okay, no, NCI had his book.
Yeah,
he had a couple of books out. Port City.
He got
stuff.
Patience. I don't have the patience to sit there and edit and all that stuff like that. But It is on my radar, on my, okay, my list of things to do is at least do an anthology.
Okay.
Of, like I said, some of the poets that have come, that have graced our stages and come through. Okay. So that we can offer that to the people.
Okay. So what I was going to imply, because I know there's a saying in the community, in poetry community, of literary poets and stage versus stage poets, or yeah, we call page versus the stage.
Yes.
What do you see yourself as, a literary poet or stage poet or both?
I say both.
Okay.
I say both. when you see me at poetry night, I'm doing more of like the stage poetry.
Right.
You know, I write because it's meant to be read and flow a certain way.
Okay.
But you know, if a lot of my written poetry is to me, it's very poetic. You know, I love writing love poems. I love writing poems that reflect on nature, reflect on a feeling, reflect on a place I've been or whatever. Yeah. And so I'm lit, like, glad you asked that, because I was just driving here. I was thinking of like writing, you know, just writing.
Right.
Because I, to be honest with you, I've had a writer's block since 2007.
Oh, no feeling.
and it's been kind of a spiritual experience, because in 2007, my job sent me to Victorville.
Okay.
To work at a school out there, to kind of, school was spiraling down. The kids were taking over. And they sent me, and I don't know why.
So, did you see anybody else?
I was driving out there like I was a hero. I was like, I'm not even from Southern California. But I went out there to work with those kids, and there was a period of time I had insomnia for like 3 days. And so I went into this crazy space where, like, you know, like I'm talking to you.
Right.
I imagine I was talking to my friend about having insomnia.
Okay.
And I was telling her, like, I was like, yeah, look, I can touch this table. It's not even there. And I reached out to touch something, I fell on the ground, I woke up, and she wasn't even there. So I was like imagining, you know, it was crazy.
Wow.
And I wanted to write about that experience. And I had the poems in my mind, like beautiful poems, but I couldn't write them.
Wow.
And I felt like the poem was for me. It wasn't for me to express, it was just for me. And so a lot of times I have poems that I have in my mind, and I don't put them on paper, I just have the poem. And it's just for me.
Oh.
So I've written poetry since then, but right. I'm saying, like, a lot of the poems I have that are deep inside are still inside. I haven't released them. Okay. I don't even know them, you know, to release them, but because they come and go, they pass through. And so one of the things that me and some of my colleagues are talking about is to start having or finding and attending poetry workshops.
Okay.
Because I feel like if you're in that creative environment, you know, it'll come out.
Do you feel like we should make a workshop?
Yeah,
like,
I feel,
because, you know, I know a couple of them here in town. But do you feel like there should be a workshop made in Mahogany, or even
I think
either Oak Park or something like that?
If we can find one,
okay,
you know, because that's one thing that I've discussed in years past. When something happens, we tend to think that we need to create something,
right?
So let's say, for instance, like, you know, domestic violence is a problem. We got to go create something, an agency to tackle the problem. And so we're starting from zero,
right?
Whereas we can go support another organization that's already doing it.
Yeah, yeah.
And they've already got the years behind them.
Right.
And so then you don't have to wear yourself out starting from day one. You can go and support somebody. So if there is a workshop that I don't know about, I would go.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? Because they've already got it. They've already got it's already, you know, I don't have to do the work.
Right.
And so you know, either way, if we create one, that's fine.
Okay.
If we don't create one, that's even better. Because we can go.
there's one way or another is going
to
happen.
Yeah. We can just go and support one, because that's the end game is to advance the poetry.
Right.
You see what I'm saying? And so I don't have to be, I don't have to always be the leader, you know.
Right.
I can join in and be the follower, okay, and just enjoy the experience.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, I can see. Yeah. Now here's the big question, because you are talking to a local DJ himself.
Uh-huh.
What got you? So you have so you're DJing.
Yes.
So you're mostly DJ for the Mahogany thing, because I know you had a DJ before too, but she left now.
Mm-hmm.
And so what is it about DJing that you love so much? Even, do you also DJ over at the Mike and Moots?
I did once.
Okay.
but I like drinking that, Mike.
And I also know you did do, you were doing Barfly too. You did a few shows at the Barfly.
Did Barfly,
So you just do, is it mostly just you getting out the DJs just to spin, just do a couple spins? Well, oh, I hate that word spin.
Yeah.
It just seems so, it's like, do you DJ, well, you're really manipulating.
I tell you what, so you know, everything is poetry.
Right.
And so when I do photography, I'm if you look at not all the images, but some of the images I have, you could look at it, and I'm hoping it's telling a story.
Okay.
Right? So it's like you feel it, you see it. In the music I play, a lot of times I'll get to Mahogany, and I'm like creating a vibe, right? So I'm like, you know, telling a story through the music, so to speak. Inside Oz Night is good because you see him, we play Umi Says, and we both rock out and just go into this whole trance in the song. And so a lot of the music I play is for that. It's like it's a vibe, it's beat, it's rhythm. I do a lot of remixes. You know, I go into the virtual digital MP3 crates and there's remixes to certain things. There's songs. There's artists that you may not have heard.
Right.
Excuse me. There's artists that you may not have heard that you hear at Mahogany.
Right.
Like, well, who was that? That was Quadrant.
Okay.
You know what I mean? That was Anderson .Paak.
Oh.
That was Hiatus Coyote.
Okay.
Or maybe like a deep jazz mix or something to that, or house, or one night we did Afrobeat.
Okay.
You know what I mean? So it's kind of like helping culture people. So they're getting the whole education sitting there waiting for poetry.
Right.
They're getting it all. And so I do weddings or whatever else. Of course, I'm just doing, you know, the typical standard, you know, dance music.
Right.
But during the dinner though,
right,
they're getting that duele. I'm sneaking it in.
Gotta have duele.
Yeah, that cocktail hour. They're getting it.
Put some subject on.
they're getting it all. Cocktail hour.
Nice.
But you know, I do the typical, cha cha slide, keep it shuffle, wobble. But then I also
staples.
Yeah, but I also throw in a little Humpty dance. I do a little tone low. You know, I throw back 90s.
Yeah.
You know, it's to me, it's fun.
Right.
You know, it's an experience that I'm having with the people,
right,
and I'm not working. I'm working with them and not for them, I would say.
Are you handle the mic? Your mic handler and stuff, or are you just basically?
I actually might even get out there on the dance floor and be dancing.
Oh snap!
Yeah, yeah. I time it out where I'm like, oh, that's the DJ. Like,
yeah,
we're having a great time.
Most definitely.
Yeah. So I get on the mic sometimes. I'll make jokes. I'm funny. So, you know, when I'm calling people, so like when I'm calling the tables up, you know, after that fifth table, you know, I get out there and I say, hey, you know, if your table 6 through 10, you know, I don't want to start no problems or anything, but, you know, you might as well just go for it.
Just in case you're wondering.
Just in case you're wondering. If you're hungry.
Food's right there.
Them wings is going down, so I'm going to go for it.
I've already got mine.
Yeah, I got mine already, so
you're waiting.
You might want to just go ahead and get up there and do it.
are you Serato or Record Box?
Serato.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's a DJ thing.
Yeah. That's Serato.
Do you play any local artists and stuff anytime?
If somebody emails me something, or you know, like Zaya Bell,
right,
she put an album out. I love her music. Luke Taylor is on the hip hop scene. You know, I love his music, so I'll spin his stuff. And just whoever I come across, I'll try to get them out there, you know.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Like I said, you're doing. I DJ weddings and also stuff for the company, and then also got my little small one, Sage Productions. So
yeah,
it's always funny when I hear another DJ like coming in, like, oh, what are you using? What you got? What are we doing?
Yeah.
You doing your thing?
Yeah. And like I said, it's a great experience. I do like 70s parties. I mean, I go in, like, I'll study. You know what I mean?
Definitely.
And so, which the bad part about it, sometimes people say, we're having a 70s party, and, you know, I got it all, right?
Right.
And so I'm like, oh, okay. So I'm going in 70s, and somebody will come up and be like, hey, you got any Cardi B?
It's always that one person.
Could you play some Cardi B? Yeah. I'm like, Cardi B? Like, I got Freddie B. I got Tina Marie. Hey, I'm like, Cardi B.
I didn't bring none, dog.
You know what I mean?
You saw the slide?
Got some DeBarge for you.
We can beat a rhythm night. Come on, let's go.
Yeah, you know, what are you talking about? Oh, yeah,
yeah. Dog getting mad.
Yeah. Yeah, and then the party person's like, hey, my grandma wanna hear some E-40. Like, just put it on one time. I'm like, what?
That's all I need. Yeah. Get one in. And
yeah.
I got, you know, so why didn't you do it?
Yeah, what the hell? You know, so it's like I said, it's a great experience, and you know, I tell people, like, look, I'm not DJ Soup.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? It's not gonna always blend.
Right.
I'm gonna give you the song, and I'm gonna give you another song.
Okay.
I'm not gonna, you know, it's not too big of a difference, but like there are people who are trained DJs who are perfectionists.
Right.
You see what I'm saying? And I'm kinda like, I do good. I mean, you know, I haven't had complaints, but but like, you know, it's gonna be the song and then another song.
Okay.
You know,
selector.
You may get a, you know,
coming in between, but yeah, the transition may be going through.
Or you know, you may get that.
Nice.
But it's not gonna be perfect, but it's always fun though.
Like, okay.
I'll be out there dancing with the people and having a good time or making jokes on the mic and, right, and so yeah.
But so what would you like to tell people? Because I know, like, even like what Cleo's basically been putting out about, you know, let's help support our Black businesses.
Mm-hmm.
You've also been pointing out Mics and Moves trying to keep the younger, because like even right now, the one of our youth poet laureates that got it from 2020 was Cloudy. Cloudy was one of the people that got it this year. And congratulations to her. So I'm basically pointing out is there's a lot of Black poets and there's a lot of Black communities that need to, what would you like to tell them? It's like, you know, should we get out there, do more, or just make a...
We definitely need support. Right. Like I said, you know, it's hard to promote a poetry night.
Yeah.
You know, venues, we got lucky with our venue because they really love us and they really are for the art. But other venues there's a bottom line.
Yeah.
You know, they have employees, they have a light bill, they gotta pay people. And so when people throw an event and people don't come, then it's like, you know, and then the artist wants to get paid, you know, all this stuff. And it's kind of like, you know, it's hard to keep it going. And then people say, oh, nothing's going on. It's like, well,
right,
you didn't go. You didn't support it.
Yeah.
And even if you don't go, like, share the flyer. Share the event with some people who might want to go and let them know so that it can continue, because it's hard. And, you know, for young poets, come to Mahogany. It's an open stage. It's a place where you can go and you can learn. You can be exposed to some of the more veteran poets. You can find your voice. I'm always there. I'm always willing to help advise poets on stage presence. I'm also willing to advise them on marketing, you know, how to get to the next level, how to market yourself as a poet. I'd say that, because here's why. What I see a lot of times is somebody who is extremely talented and they come into the scene and they're performing and they're going around to the open mics and they're doing whatever, and they never take off from there.
Right.
They're always right there. And then they get discouraged or they get bitter about it. Like, oh, I never, you know, nobody appreciated it, or I didn't advance. And then they quit.
Right.
And then it's kind of like, well, you know, you were there.
You know,
you had your music, you had all the stuff, and then you just quit because you get burned out.
Right.
And so I'm always somebody who is willing to mentor or answer questions or give advice to people who want to figure out how to go to that next level.
Right.
You know, 'cause like I said, I dealt with touring poets. We actually toured for like a second. We did like a little California tour a couple times. I've thrown shows in L.A. I performed at Whitney Houston's birthday party.
Nice.
That she didn't show up to.
That hurts.
Crack cocaine. You know what I mean? It was really her party, and they booked me. And I was there performing, and she didn't show up.
Dang.
But you know, I'm always willing to mentor and coach and talk to people about how to get there, how to do it. And but like as a patron, you know, you see tickets for poetry night, buy tickets.
Right.
Because for me, like at the Guild, you know, I want to bring I got Abby O'Doon from the Last Poets.
Right.
Calls me once a year. Hey, what's up? We bring me out. I'm like, oh man, I wish I could, like, you know, it. And he's flexible,
right?
You know, he's not even in for the money. He loves Sacramento.
Oh, okay.
But am I gonna bring in enough crowd to pay for that plane ticket?
There you go.
You know what I mean?
That big plane.
I wanted to bring Jessica Kerr Moore, who is a phenomenal, legendary poet.
Right.
I wanted to bring this poets I want to bring. You know, it's just a matter of like getting the support, getting people to come out and buy tickets to come to the show.
Oh, okay.
And you know, once we get to that level where it's consistent, then you'll start seeing national poets coming back to Sacramento. This used to be the place.
The like, hub, yeah.
Mahogany was like, I look back on some of the years in the beginning. I used to get poets to come out and I pay them like $25. And they're like, oh, thank you. You know, now, of course, gas prices. But,
yeah.
But I'm saying back then, they were just coming out for the love of coming. And they knew that they were going to sell their CDs and their books and
yeah.
merchandise and all that, you know. And so it's essential that people just make time to come out support anything. I was out, what's today? Today's Monday?
Today's Monday, yeah. Third.
So, yeah, I was out Saturday night. Just went to some art shows just to support, you know, just to show people, hey, you know, we're going to pack it out. We're going to support. And so that's it. I mean, if we just, like I said, if you can't make it, just tell somebody. Share the flyer or just tell somebody, hey, poetry tonight, you should go. Or art show tonight, you should go. Call Cleo, get some cooking.
True that. True.
Buy some body products, you know what I mean?
Right.
Because that's what helps us get to that next level. And I think, I'm trying to think of what I said the other day. Like on the business level, we did a 20 challenge, right? And so what it was that I challenged people to find 20 black businesses and ask for their Cash App.
Okay.
And send them a dollar.
Really?
Just send them a dollar.
Okay.
Yeah. And so on my timeline, I said, hey, you know, whenever I donated, I think I did like $40. But a lot of the businesses that put their name on there, they didn't share it.
Really?
Like they didn't it was just kind of right there.
It didn't
get shared, so it didn't expand. And I'm like, okay.
Okay, I can see that being an issue.
Because they're going to care about themselves.
Yeah.
And so as a community, you know, when we, you ever done a Nigerian wedding or Indian wedding?
I did an Indian wedding, but not a Nigerian wedding.
They got money, right?
Yeah.
They throwing money. So
yeah, it's community. Yeah.
Same thing in Nigeria.
Yeah.
They had the money dance. And the last one I did, the couple I did, it was $6,000 that these people just threw out
them.
And to support the couple. And in other nationalities, they support.
Yeah.
It's like, this is a dollar. It's a dollar.
Yeah.
You could find a dollar. You know what I'm saying? So my challenge to people, anybody listening, just go into a business and drop a dollar on a thing and leave. Just drop a dollar. If we have 500,000 people in Sacramento.
Yeah.
500,000. If 1% of 500,000 people just went into a business and dropped a dollar, here you go. I'm investing in your business.
Right.
Boom. I mean, that business now has capital to
start.
Right.
Yeah.
To start.
Yeah.
Or to succeed. It's like we look for discounts. We go to a black restaurant and the minute that we see a black, oh, this is black owned. Oh man, and you know, and
you already have some kind of disregard.
Send this back,
yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And so on two levels, it's the black business has to really be good,
right?
As far as I'm not better than anything else, but just have integrity, and don't use your black business. I'm black, so I'm gonna overcharge.
Right.
Don't get greedy. Just be honest,
right.
for the most part. And as black people, we have to learn to patronize and support. And if we have an issue, the first conversation you have should not be Facebook. It should be the manager of that business.
Touché.
Right? Hey, I had a bad time. Let's talk. Let me help you get better.
Right.
Right? Because that's how the businesses succeed.
Right.
We jumped all over, not we, but they jumped all over Sandra Dee's when she was on the Gordon Ramsay show.
Okay.
And I'm like, wow, you guys are really jumping on Sandra Dee's. I've never had a bad time there, right? I've always had good food.
There you go.
You know what I'm saying? And she's right there.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have an issue, just say, hey, this is the issue.
Right.
How could we help? right? And and now she's closed, right? And it's just like, that was a beautiful location. It's not just her, but I'm just saying that there's other businesses that have not gotten the support that they needed from the community.
Because of the ratings and stuff.
Ratings and whatever else, but then those businesses closed, and then we say, well, we don't have any black businesses. Well,
there you go.
You had a chance to support
it. You saw it.
You didn't go.
You didn't want to do it.
You know what I mean? And so, yeah, it's to me, it's saddening. I've been in Sacramento for a long time, my whole life.
Yes, you have.
And I've seen stuff come and go. We should be in the conversation of downtown.
Right.
There's all the development going on downtown.
Yeah.
And we're not down there. We should be down there. And we shouldn't have to open our restaurant and then have a ghetto dance night just to support the rest. You know what I mean?
Unfortunately.
We get to that point where we have the food, and then it's like, oh, nobody's really coming in here eating. Okay, we got to do a ghetto dance night.
Yeah.
And then people getting stabbed, and then it's like, you close. It's just the whole cycle.
Yeah.
We shouldn't have to go ghetto to succeed.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So there are, I mean, you know, I like... there's some coffee houses that are, I live in Elk Grove, so the Savvy Coffee House is in Elk Grove on Elk Grove Boulevard.
I never heard of Savvy.
Savvy is right by, it's in the same complex as Trader Joe's.
Okay.
Next to the UPS store. It's on Bruceville and Elk Grove Boulevard.
Right.
And it's a black-owned coffee house. They use chocolate fish coffee. So it's high-end coffee.
Really?
You get a great customer service. It's a great experience. Lovely place. But Tiferet Coffee House is the Ethiopians. They own like three of them. Maestro Coffee House is in Natomas.
Okay.
Those are all black businesses that are doing well. And there's some other ones I got to think about.
It's just the way you point out. I mean, it's almost like we need a green book type of thing for people to know where they're at.
Yeah.
I mean, I hate to say like that, but it seems like, because there's a lot of times we always get that old saying of, well, there's no black business there. It's like, how you know? They're just not, right, maybe not in your block. Mm-hmm. That's the problem. You're looking around your block. Unfortunately, we can't make one block have everything.
Exactly.
Like, you know, some other people.
And the thing is, here's the thing. Let me just tell you this is the honest truth for me. And this is, you know, not a popular truth, but it's honest. When we open up our business, you know, we're a black business. The problem is that we don't look at the same business plan that a non-black business would have. Let me give you an example. When you go to Walmart, right? Walmart has black hair care products. They've got white hair care products. They've got Hispanic aisle. They got an Asian aisle. You go to Walmart, it's stuff in there for everybody. Right? You don't feel like it's specifically I don't know why I use Walmart. I mean,
you can still go with it.
No, people hate Walmart.
Yeah. You know, well, if people hate it, but they'll still love it.
Walmart. Hey, I'm not promoting Walmart. I'm just saying that this is the first thing I thought of. It's a successful business.
Successful business.
And they have something in there for everyone.
Right.
And so, as a black business, if you really want to be successful, your demographic cannot solely be black people.
Mm.
It's got to be everyone.
Right.
Right? So those coffee houses I mentioned, it's not African Bambaataa in there. It is anybody who wants coffee. And everybody gets the same smile and the same service, and boom. And now it's successful. People feel like they can take ownership of it. Like, you go to Savvy Coffee House, people are like, oh, my God, this is our coffee house.
Okay.
And so that is kind of like how I feel about, if you really want to have a business, you know, we open the same things over and over. We open up soul food restaurants that aren't really high end. It's just kind of like, you know, we don't put the money into the decor and the service. We open up, we sell hair. You know what I mean? It's like, I feel like we should have the demographic. We should look at a demographic where it's like everybody can come and it feel welcome, and this is for everybody, so that you get all that money. Because everybody else is doing it for us.
Right.
You know, you go any, you know. So that's advice I give to people, is like, you know, it's good to, you're not losing the blackness by having a diverse business.
Right.
You know, my boy Rob Archie owns Pangea Cafe. You go in there, everybody's in there. He owns Bach, which is down, chicken place down on R Street.
Yeah, yeah.
Everybody's in there. You know what I'm saying? And he owns another place. I forgot the name of it, but he's a cool guy. You know, he's chatting it up with everybody. Right. You know, and it's that's my thing. You know, my clientele for photography is everybody who wants to have a photo taken. You know, I'm not just saying, oh, you got to be black. I can't do. No, it's, you want some photos? Come get them.
It might be black owned, but we do
it
all.
It might be black owned, but it's everybody, you know, come get them. There so you go. That's the thing. We have to really put together the business plan to include everybody who has money.
Okay.
You know, you can be black at home. You know, black, I'm X. But in your business, right, it's going to be, no, I'm going to serve the people who need to be served.
That's what I'm talking about. So where can they find your, what could be your website, and where can they find you on social media if they want to get a hold of you?
Social media, if you want to just see my random musings, Instagram, it's Malik Speaks.
Okay.
It's whatever I feel at the moment, you're going to get it on there. the photography aspect of my Instagram is Kyrie, which is K-H-I-R-Y, underscore, and then The Magic Eye.
Okay.
Kyrie underscore The Magic Eye. That's the photography. It's a lot of so I have a series called the Brown Sugar series.
Right.
And what I'm doing is I'm showcasing, it's like it's the liberation of women, right? So it's the liberation of women of color. We just looked at the Super Bowl last night. People were like, oh my God, I can't believe that J-Lo or whoever, I didn't watch the halftime show, but I guess it was too sexy.
Yeah, Shakira.
Right?
Yeah,
like, Shakira. And I saw the photos. I'm like, that's not sexy. I mean, it's sexy, but it's not like
ridiculous,
indecent.
Yeah.
Right. And I hate to say it, but like, you know, if Miley Cyrus would have had the same outfit on, it wouldn't be nothing, because people were showing the pictures from the dude with the shirt off.
Right.
Right. Nobody complained.
Right.
It wasn't that uproar, so to speak.
Right.
And Madonna had a butt naked book of sex when she was, you know, a couple years ago. So. What I do is I have a series where it's African American or people of color, and it's, we are showing some skin. So there's a variety. It's not just that on my Instagram, but I'm telling people. My mom said, I saw your Instagram. I didn't invite her to that one. But she found it. There's no naked women on there. What the hell? And I was like, well, it's artistic. It's not porn or anything.
Right.
And so that's that. On Facebook, same thing. Malik Speaks, or The Magic Eye by Kyrie. Mikes and Moods has an Instagram.
Okay.
I mean, not Instagram. Mikes and Moods has a Facebook page.
Okay.
And then Mahogany Urban Poetry Series has a Facebook page. And I think we have a website called mahoganyurbanpoetry.com or something to that effect. Mahoganypoetry.com.
Okay.
So all those ways, you know, you'll find me some way. Add me.
Everybody, add Kyrie to your thing. Get a hold of this man. This man's a public figure and a staple in Sacramento. So, and also, if you can't get yourself over on to Mahogany Poetry Series, they're over at Queen Sheba in downtown Sacramento off Broadway, Broadway 18th. And it's always on every Wednesday, starting from 9 to 12. 9 to 10 is mingle time. So when you get over there, you'll see them mingling, hearing music and stuff. You might even see Kyrie DJ.
Yeah.
So yeah. Go do it and stuff. But thank you, Kyrie, for coming down to IAM.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, man. You know, like I said, come down. 1704 Broadway is our address. And
you have Mike and Moods on.
Mike and Moods is the last Saturday every month at the Guild Theater. Mm-hmm. And that's on 35th and Broadway, I believe.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, 2835th Street. That whole area is a beautiful area.
Yes.
Not to talk too long, but they people talk about gentrification.
Right.
That whole area is black owned.
We'll talk about that.
The whole Triangle District is black owned.
Most definitely.
It is.
All right, everybody. Take care. Peace.
All right.
As the episode comes to a close, please go to linktree.com/iambictheme. That's linktr.ee/iambictheme.
Please send any emails that you may have to iambiczine@gmail.com.
Music by Mr. Resolution. Recorded and show has been recorded and edited by A Serious Productions. And we'll see you at the next show. Bye.